Hello and welcome. This week I'm going to be talking to writer, comedian, actress, improviser, podcaster, multi-talented individual, Carrie Adloyd. She is behind the hugely successful podcast Griefcast, a multi-award winning, I believe, and obviously we do touch upon the subject of death, it has to be said. And I find it very interesting. I lost my mum a couple of years before having my first child, and I sort of couldn't get away from it, really. And not in a necessarily altogether bad way, you know. I just think about her, obviously I think about her all the time anyway, but I'd think about her as a mum and how, you know, suddenly I guess you understand what they were doing, you know, when you might not have understood before, and you sort of and so to do that when they're gone is kind of adds another dimension to your grief and your understanding of your parents. So it kind of brings you closer to them in a weird way as well. Anyway, we talk a lot about that, and it's an old doom and gloom. We talk about some fun. Yeah, no, it's not, and it's hopefully helpful to anyone who is out there, who's listening, who maybe has lost particularly a parent before having kids. Anyway, when she first came in to talk, I asked her what propelled her to start a family.
I always wanted kids. I definitely wasn't someone that was like, not for me. Mm-hmm. And then my brother had kids before me. And my nephew now is great, but he really didn't sleep at all. So I would say that added about 2 years. Like, it put me off about 2 years, yeah. Which I did say to their face once, because they were like talking about kids, and I was like, oh yeah, don't worry, you put me off. And they were like, what? We're so happy. And I was like, you don't sound it. I was like, all you do is moan. All you do is say how you're not sleeping. And they were like, yeah, but we don't.
No.
And now I know you do the moaning, but obviously you accept the caveat is it's amazing.
But I think maybe we don't. The thing is, if you talk about how immeasurably amazing your world is since you've had children, you sound like a cock.
Yeah. Oh, you sound. I think you sound like you're in a cold, don't you? You sound like mad. Oh, it's awful. All these things are awful, but I loved them. I just love them. You sound like you should leave them.
Yeah, exactly. It's not good for anyone.
Isn't right. So they didn't talk about. I mean, my nephew really didn't sleep very well. So I think although he was very fun in the day. So I think that added about 2 years, because I thought, God, that looks awful. Don't want a night. Imagine not waking up at 10:30. No thanks.
Yeah.
And then...
do you not wake up at 10:30 now?
No. No, I want to so badly sometimes. I just think, it's not not even 10:30. It's 8:30 you're after, isn't it? It's 8:30.
Oh. I mean... Honestly, right now, my kids woke up at 6 and I was delighted.
Oh, yeah.
Because they've been waking up between about 5 and 6.
I can't
do
that.
For months, actually, since the summer. So, yeah. So
okay, I shouldn't complain, because actually she does mostly wake up at 7, which I know. Oh, okay, I know, I shouldn't complain. I know, dreamy. It is dreamy. And then when the clocks moved, she started waking up. When the clocks went forward, it became 8 for a bit. Yeah, not long, but it was an amazing. She didn't know. She hadn't figured out. And then obviously she was like, don't worry, guys.
Yeah,
I've reset my clock.
And
then I would say, without being a fucking cliche, the old biological clock kicked in. And I just suddenly went from someone who wasn't bothered to who would like walk past Topshop Maternity and stare at that window and be like, I want to wear those clothes.
Yeah.
And I would hold warm things, like hot water bottles, think, I want a hot water bottle. I want a baby here where the hot water bottle is. Like, really weird. Just not overnight, but probably over like a couple of weeks. I was like, oh, I'd like one now, please. Like, just something kicked in, which I know is such a cliche.
Do you know what? I don't think it is. Or not to the people that I've spoken to. Really? Or maybe everyone answers with a quote. You know, they're used to giving the cerebral answer, which is like, well, we thought the time was right, or blah, blah.
Oh, it was actually not the right time. We kept saying it's not the right time.
It's never the right time.
And my mum said, there's no right time. Yeah. That's my impression of my mum. And then my husband definitely wasn't as keen. Because he was like, our life's really... This is how I won the argument, if anyone's interested. He's like, our life's so nice. And I was like, yes, but imagine if we don't do anything and we stay doing exactly what we're doing now. We hit 40 and we're just those people who do exactly what we want and go wherever and sleep to 10:30. I was like, imagine the kind of arseholes we'll be. I was like, we'll be such arseholes. And he was like, yeah, God, we would be, wouldn't we? I said, I think we need this. I think we need it. And that sort of swayed him. He was like, yeah, I don't want to get to like, oh, you know, 40's not fair, but like 60 and be like, oh, we've eaten at loads of good restaurants, but
yeah, we've
what else?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think I mean this is not to say that having kids is the be all and end all.
I know, it's such a fine line.
It's a really fine line,
because people get so cross when
they
you
do get so cross.
They get so cross and they email in.
Yes.
Yeah,
but I, you know, personally for me, it brings a richness to my life that I wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, yeah. And that's not to say your life isn't rich if you don't have kids, but I thought, for me, I know if I get to 60 and all we've done is eat out and sleep in, as fun as that sounds, I thought, I'm going to be really pissed off.
And yeah, exactly.
I'll be annoyed.
This is going to make me sound very worthy, but I, when I got to my early 30s, I wasn't in a relationship, so it wasn't a kind of, it wasn't sort of, having kids was not really, well, it was an option, but not in a nice way. And so I thought, well, what can I had that sort of tug as well, which was thinking, I want to feel useful. Like, I can sleep until 11, but should I be?
Yeah, yeah.
So I started mentoring this girl who lives near me, who I still see, who's like 16 now, whatever. But, we, you know, I'd just take her to, like, the zoo, or we'd go swimming, or whatever, whatever. And that was some, so I think maybe that was also a, like, not a biological thing, but it was a sort of sense of like, I need to be responsible for more than I'm responsible for, and I need to do things that I don't necessarily want to do.
I think that's
the thing.
Yeah, and I just felt like, and again, it's only my experience, and if you don't have kids, I'm not saying your life is crap. You are sleeping until 10:30. It's very
enjoy
nice.
Enjoy it.
But yeah, I just felt like something was missing. Mm. I just thought, this isn't what, the meaning of my life. I want it to have more than this. And it's not, you know, if we hadn't had a child, I would have found something else, like mentoring or something. I just thought, I can't just be looking after me, because I know I'm going to turn into a very selfish person.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that doesn't mean if you don't have kids, you're selfish. It's just, I know I was going to be like that. I was going to become an arsehole. And I sort of
you
needed...
You definitely were going
to. Yeah, I just thought, this is what we need. And we've been together a very long time. So it could have been on the cards for a very long time. Like, and we'd kind of like, you know, just been like, oh, well, we've got all the time in the world because we've been together so long. And that's when I started thinking, we actually haven't. Like, why do we keep acting like, oh, yeah, we'll get to it when we're grown ups? So I was like, we are.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, yeah. I was like, yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes, we are. We're here. We're at that bit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just had a really, like, mad... But then we did wait, because his... I think he won't mind me saying this. His mum had died. So we'd gone through, like, looking after her and the cancer, and he'd cared for her. And he was like, I just can't take any more upheaval.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
Obviously, I was not allowed to argue with that. I was like, that is valid. That is valid. So, yeah, we... That's why then, and then eventually I was like, I think you, are you ready? Like, should we? And then that's what happened.
And you say you've been together for a long time.
Whether
we believe that is another, no. What did you, I spoke to Fergus a few weeks ago, and he'd been with Laurie for over 10 years, I think, by the time they had Louis, in fact, maybe 15 or something like that. And he said they'd worked through every kind of eventuality in their relationship by the time they had kids. So he sort of felt like there was nothing more to know about that person, and they knew how to get around each other's little, kind of idiosyncrasies and all that kind of thing. Did you feel like that, or what was your experience?
Yeah, I think that's true, actually. Perhaps we never really realised it, but we have been together an awfully long time. I won't say how long, but it's fucking long. If I told you, go, oh my God. And And so even actually when I was pregnant, we sort of had this chat once where I was like, what are your thoughts on parenting? Like, we hadn't really talked about it. And he said everything that I thought he'd say. And I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, we completely agree. Because, yeah, you've gone through so much. And, you know, my dad was already, just to talk about grief, my dad died when I was 15. But since we'd been together, he'd lost his dad and his mum. And, you know, had the huge upheaval of that. So we'd been through so much together and survived so much. And, yeah, I think there was no question of, like, there's nothing else. I know you inside and out. And yeah. I absolutely love you and know you're going to be amazing in this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I definitely didn't have any... There's been no surprises in terms of parenting. No. It's just been like, oh, I knew you'd do that. It's more that. I knew she'd like you more. So bloody calm. So calm. He's the calm ones, of course.
Right, yeah.
It's more fun, isn't it, than the shouty one?
Well, I don't know. I think...
I'll get respect in the long run.
Yes, you will. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
But they all should always have a... Should always love
they
them.
Like the calm... I'm the calm one. They like the calm one at first, think, maybe. But I think they'll, you know... They'll come... Your daughter will come around to you one day.
I just got to play the long game.
I think you've got to play the long game.
I hope I don't die.
Yeah. Talking of which...
Yeah, talking of which. Yeah.
We talked a bit about this when I came on Griefcast. Yes, but how has your... So losing your father...
Yeah.
Actually also, at such a young age, how has that informed your parenting?
Not in a great way sometimes. So yeah, as we talked about in Griefcast, I suffer from anxiety, and which I've only recently, I thought I was just a worrier, but it turns out it's a medical condition that everyone has, so great. And Lauren Silver, another girl who lost her dad when she was 17, came on Griefcast and was talking about death anxiety specifically, which I was like, oh, that's what I have. So because when you lose a parent very young, you become very hyper aware that people can go at any point, nothing's really safe. Mm-hmm. So I'd say that's been hard because I catastrophize a lot. So yeah, you know, when she's ill, I'm thinking either she's going to die or I'm going to die or my husband's going to die. And the worst thing that happened, which I'll say just because it might help someone else, is like, I was so anxious about me dying all the time. Like, I would make myself feel better by being like, you know, my husband's a really good man and I will leave her with a good parent. And I was on the tube and I was like, God, I can't believe that's the worst thing that happened. What's the worst thing that happened, Karen? I'd do it. And I suddenly went, that's not the worst thing. The worst thing is that we both die. And then I was like, oh my God, as if my brain, I really thought, what a dick brain. What a dick, like, why have you done that to me?
You led me here,
You led me, you knew. Yeah. And then you were like, look what we found.
Yeah.
I do worry a lot about that. But the way I get round it, which is quite good, is I sort of think to myself, well, your dad died when you were really young and you're functionally okay. Mm-hmm. You will be fine. She'll be fine.
Yeah.
She'll be fine.
Yeah.
Because actually... It doesn't destroy you. It's painful and all the rest of it. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's painful. But like...
Says Griefcast.
Yes. Yeah, so sensitive. Very sensitive topic. Yada, yada, yada. They die. Yeah. But I do think... I do hold that very dear to me that I'm all right. And actually, it's taught me a lot. And I'm like, it's not preparing already, like as if I'm dying. But that helps my brain. And then the other thing that is hard... when you've lost someone is the grandparent thing. Mm-hmm. So I did find that because my mum's still around, so she has one grandparent. And I don't know if we talked about this, but oh yeah, we did. If somebody fucking moans about the grandparents or the in-laws, I find that very tricky. So, even though I'm sure their life, you know, if I had them all here, I might be annoyed by them. But nothing quite like a granddad pushing a little girl on the swing to choke me up on the playground.
Some people complaining about, you know, grandparents who are too, you know, want to be too involved. I mean, I know a few people who have the reverse where they're kind of like trying to get their in-laws or parents
to be interested.
Be interested and they're not. But if it's, if they're complaining about, oh, they want to come around and see the kids again, you think, oh my God.
I know.
You know.
One that gets me, which I do understand, people go, when they find out my mum lives near, and they go, oh, well, you're lucky.
Yes. I have a similar thing. My dad lives near, exactly, and my kids only have one. Well, they have one biological grandparent, but then my stepmother is very hands-on as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, they sit very close by.
Oh, you're lucky.
Like, yeah, well, it makes up for...
Oh, you got it easy. you know, her parents live in Yorkshire. They're alive.
They're alive.
You can get on the train. I can't get on a train and visit him.
Yeah, yeah.
He's dead, guys. So I know they don't mean it. I know every, you know, everybody's shoes, you stand in them and you'd feel differently. But I that's the one that really I find very difficult not to be polite about. Yeah. Anything else, I think, oh, yeah, sure, your life's different. But that, I think, fuck you. Just because I think it's just a very sad thing to know that they just won't get to be a granddad or a grandpa.
That way around. I think people always assume that, the way it's often said to me is, oh, you know, how sad that, you know, that you can't talk to your mum about these things. And you think, well, yes, but, you know, I've got used to that on lots of different levels.
Yeah.
Actually, what's really sad is she doesn't get to do
this.
That's sad for her.
That's so true, because they're thinking of you and you're like...
and it's like, well, that's...
I'm alive.
I'm alive and I deal with lots of senses of loss in terms of her in loads of different aspects of my life. This is just one of them. But she would have loved it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you think, oh, that's a shame she didn't get to do that.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I feel. I feel like I'm used to him being dead.
Yeah.
Like I am, obviously it's been 20 years, like I'm used to it, but I think, oh, he would have, and also he's not always the greatest dad, like he had his imperfections, but I think he would have been a really good grandpa.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I think he would have felt happy in that role than he did in dad role.
Yeah.
And so I find that sad, and it's the knowledge as well, that's what my husband gets very upset about, like his mum was just so knowledgeable about so many things, and she could knit and sew and bake and I mean, she makes it sound homely. She was like actually like sort of green and common protester type lady. Yeah. But so all those little things that you think, oh, she'd know what those flowers were, or she'd know what that butterfly does, or why those things. And she was really good with stuff like that. And I find that loss very painful. She's like, oh, she would have told us all.
Yeah.
But like, I make a point, which I feel strange even doing. Some photos I'll say, oh, that's Granny, which is what she would have been called. And at the moment, she has no idea what I'm talking about. But I just want it to be that she's spoke about, and I say, "Oh, that was Granny's." Or I find it easier for his side than a couple of times I've had to say, "Oh, that's you know, Grandpa's book." And I think, because that's very strange to call him Grandpa, as in I'm thinking of my grandpa, like his dad. So, but I try and make myself so it's not completely like he didn't exist.
No, you know? I think that's the thing. Yeah, I think also it's quite important to sort of talk about them in a very real sense.
Yes.
And important for you as well.
Yeah, I think so it's not definitely for you.
To create these kind of angels who are kind of perfect. You know, to sort of say, well, they would have not liked that. Or, you know, it's kind
You don't want to sanctify them. And equally, I don't want it to be that I wouldn't want her to think she could never bring it up. Because it was so upsetting.
No, exactly.
So, yeah, we have photos up. And just objects and things that she sewed. She was like an embroiderer and made like these art pieces and stuff. So we have a few bits up in a kind of, just in a way that one day I would like her to say, yes, oh, I can I have that?
Yes.
Because I've got stuff. Yeah. Even though the grandma I didn't really like.
I've
still got stuff. You're like, well, that's where I'm sort of from.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it's very tricky. The other thing I have, which I don't know how you feel about, is that I try to be okay with being sad in front of her.
Yes, that's interesting.
Which is quite hard. Like, me and my mum were talking the other day, I think about my dad, and my mum got upset, and I got upset, and she was like, oh, don't show her! Like, she's in the room or something. And I was like, why can't she see that we're sad? And I was like, well, that's why I'm in therapy.
No, I think that's very, very important.
So I want that to be okay, that it's okay that I'm sad about him, but it's not overwhelming, and... like, I miss him and it's sad he's not here. Like, trying to make that language already a part of it.
Yeah.
But it's hard, because obviously this part of you is like, I don't want her to know about sadness. No, but
then better. It's definitely a running thing, which is, if she learns that in the comfort of your family and with you and stuff, then it's going to be not the scary thing that it is when suddenly she hasn't been prepared for it.
Yeah.
So it's all of that, you know, we're preparing kids for pain and failure and all those things, so that they're not put off.
Well, that's what I thought. I said to my mum, I was like, would you rather she saw me crying and then saw that I spoke to you, you made me feel better, I blew my nose and I was all right?
Yeah.
Or would you rather that I cried and disappeared and it was like, what happened to mummy? She was crying, we mustn't look at her.
Yeah. And we mustn't be near her.
Yeah, exactly.
She's upset. Yeah, that's which the last thing she needs.
Quite weird for my mum because she's so like very hippie and open. But I think something like we'll that you know when you see their childhood kick in, like they can't they just can't get rid of, and they're like, oh, the children mustn't know. And I was like, I don't know. I think it's.
Yeah, I think it's really important.
Yeah,
it's
I think
really interesting.
They do know anyway. But if you don't tell them,
well,
they'll just make
that's
it up.
The other thing, yeah,
and
exactly.
they'll think it's for some other reason or they did something rather than going, oh, yeah, she's her dad died when she was young.
Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, I do try. I mean, I'm not saying I like walk into a room and like, look at me.
Yeah.
Mummy's crying. Look at the tears.
Slapping your face.
Yeah, yeah. Pain is
what's mummy crying about today?
Did you know mummy does a podcast about death? She's very sad. Yeah, just keep it light, guys.
Yeah.
Only when you need to.
Going back to what you were saying in terms of the sort of death anxiety, because I think I have a friend who has a similar thing where she's I think she described something recently where they were in a restaurant with the kids and then it was like a delivery guy came in with a helmet on. I think maybe it was just after the London Bridge shooting.
Right, yeah.
And she just immediately thought he's gonna shoot us all.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And just that
she's in the club
level. Yeah.
Yeah, I did that.
And that and her father died when she was quite young. I think she once described it to me and she was like, you know, her partner would say, well, so unlikely to happen. She's going, but it does happen.
But it does happen.
You know, and how that's how, you know, and...
Yeah, my therapist is constantly saying to me, like, look at all the evidence where you're safe. And I'm like, but look at the one time fine.
Yeah.
So I'm always defending myself, I feel like, to my therapist. I'm like, look, I get it. Yes, day to day, no one's dropping dead of cancer. But the one time it mattered, they did.
Yes.
So can you see, like, we as humans, we learn through evidence. So when you're young and a parent dies, you know, even if it's not suddenly, but if a parent dies, it's you learn, okay, can't trust anything, the world I thought was safe is not safe, the people who were supposed to be here forever and look after me, you can't rely on them.
Yeah,
they might die, ergo everyone might die.
Yeah,
which means nothing is safe. So it's a very logical progression.
It's
heightened and mad. And
how do you combat that?
Therapy. Which I've only last couple of years, I didn't have any therapy before that, has really helped, because I think naming it, I think, is really helpful. So 2 years ago I wouldn't have told you out loud how much I think about it. Wouldn't have told you that, you know, I think about getting run over every time I cross the road.
Yeah.
Every time someone begins a conversation with me, I think, okay, well, they're gonna tell me they're dying. Like, you know, every lump, bump, scratch is cancer in my head. It's, and unfortunately my in-laws both died of cancer, so now me and my husband are as bad as each other. I've got pins and needles. Oh my God, have you?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're dying. So I think talking about it and naming it and being aware, okay, that's anxiety, really helps you to separate it. And I know it's always very fashionable now, we've all got anxiety, but I do think it's helpful to go, okay, that thought process, it isn't a thought, it's just mental activity, and it's designed to scare me because my brain is still panicking that someone died. And something, my brain went into overdrive when he died, and to survive, I thought I had to protect myself more than I needed to. I don't, I'm okay, there's no tigers around.
Yeah.
Just take a step back. There's a book called The Worry Cure, which is really hard for my accent to say if you've got a lazy suburban accent. The Worry Cure. Which talks a lot about different types of anxiety, and I found that quite helpful because it's very sort of not clinical, but very like, this is literally what your body's doing.
Yeah.
It thinks there's a tiger attacking your village and you have to just look around and go, there isn't one.
Yeah.
So it's just stuff like that. And then, you know, talking to friends or just being aware, talking to my husband a lot about it. And I think when you do say it out loud, it becomes so ridiculous that you can then hopefully be like, oh yeah, obviously that's not going to happen. But when you protect that thought and think, yeah, I might get, every time I get across the road, I'm going to get hit by a car, you then, it becomes valid, you know, you start feeding that horrible thought rather than shoving it out in daylight like a gremlin and watching it melt. Is that a good metaphor for you?
Pretty good.
It's a gremlin. Don't feed it after midnight.
And also what you just said, which in fact, Sarah Soleimani was on a couple of weeks ago, and she said a similar thing where she said she, you know, her mom died when she was 16.
Wow,
and she said
you know, she looks at herself now and kind of goes, well, I'm okay. So actually, yeah, you know, my mum died. You know, that's the worst thing, you know. So actually, yeah, to sort of then look at your kids and go, well, you know, like...
But they would be fine.
Yeah, yeah,
they,
yeah.
And I'm proof of that. Yeah, and Sarah's proof of that. Like, people survive these things.
Yeah.
It doesn't destroy you.
No.
It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt and change you and all sorts of things. But, yeah, I'm here and I'm all basically all right.
Yeah.
Well, so, we'll see. See if I pass the mum test. Oh, God.
We were talking, in fact, when you arrived, about... I was talking about how some friends of my husband's were helping me. Mm. And I start thinking, well, maybe he's part of the mafia. And that's why they're helping, because they're going to die unless they help me with my podcast.
They feel threatened.
They feel threatened. And that comes from... not anxiety, but like overactive imagination. Yeah. Is that like the worst bedfellow if you are?
Yeah, I think that's why performers maybe have it quite badly.
Yeah.
Because I definitely have an overactive imagination. And I would say if you're a performer and writer, it's not just overactive. That's what school tells you. Actually, what you have is a really powerful imagination.
Yeah.
And if someone says, imagine you're riding on a rainbow with on a unicorn now eating chips, you're like, yeah, I'm there.
Yeah,
got it?
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we don't have to be like, what would that be like? Yeah. You're like, yeah, I can completely...
Sounds crazy.
Oh, it sounds lovely. And so when you have anxiety and your brain is really good at conjuring up incredible, horrible scenarios, I then feel like I feel them very quickly.
Yeah.
And my therapist is always like talking about how much I feel things very strongly. I'm like, that's literally my job. Like, my job is to go on set and feel the fake things.
Yes.
So, of course, when my brain's like, imagine this, I'm like, oh, I could play that. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's an unusual combination when you're an actor as well, because it's also the reason you're good at doing acting.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, you have to have... vividly feel it when it's not there.
Have a very sort of thin skin. Absorb feelings as you see them around you and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, and be have a camera in your face and be surrounded by people in a completely fake situation and pretend that you're upset about something and conjure that. And so, of course, if I'm on the tube surrounded by people, it's not happening. I can conjure the feeling of I'm going to die any minute. Like, it's easy.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think that's the other thing of... That's why I find it helpful to be aware. Just be like, oh, I'm doing it. Yeah. I'm doing it. It's not me being psychic. It's me making me feel those things because I don't want to feel other things normally. It's normally a protection of other things.
Yeah.
So I find that, just helpful.
So how has your creativity been affected by having a kid? You know,
it's like counselling. Oh my God. It's difficult because, as ever, it's not terrible or amazing. It's been hugely affected, negatively and positively. So what I really miss, this sounds so negative, I miss the dawdling. Mm-hmm. Like, I miss the staring out of windows, walking about London with an hour to kill, thinking, I wonder if I could write that or if that would be... And I feel like I don't have that time anymore because everything's so rushed. Mm-hmm. And that's the reason I miss that 10:30 lion so much. Is like, I used to lie in bed and look out the window and just think and like percolate on stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. Maybe I could... Oh, maybe so-and-so would like to do that project. Like, that time I really miss. And I think that is very helpful for creative to have the abundance of time.
Mm-hmm.
But positive stuff, in case you ever listened to this, like 20 years on, it makes you work a lot faster, which I think is a lot of people say.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes... I love the... I was always quite good at no bullshit anyway, but it's made me even more like just cut through things that don't matter, aren't important, need to be done now. And I think it's made me more productive because I think I like the dawdling a bit too much.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think actually, in some ways, I miss it because it's really fun.
Yeah.
But like, I started my podcast when I was pregnant and I got it out 2 weeks before she was born. And then, because she was late.
Yeah.
So that's why it happened. Because she was, thanks very much. And then that drive of having a baby and being like, oh, it just has to get done.
Yeah.
So I think if I hadn't have been pregnant, I would have sat on the idea longer.
Yeah. So when you first had her, were you just doing the podcast or were you doing lots of other things as well?
I was doing lots of other things. Mm. Just the usual. I mean, I hadn't... the year I was pregnant was very tough. Like, acting work was so hard because they just kept going, but the character's not pregnant. Okay, thank you very much. I was so angry because I was like, you just don't see pregnant people on
screen.
What
do you mean? So you would have had a part and then you got pregnant and they'd say, well, the character's not pregnant.
No, it's more auditions, like trying to get seen for stuff. Right. And then they'd be like, oh, they'd find out, oh, Carrie, they want you to come in for this. I'd say, oh, have you told them I'm pregnant? Because I was very, very visibly pregnant really quickly. There wasn't, it was like so ridiculous. Oh, we told them they're pregnant. They said the character's not pregnant, so now they don't need you to come in. I'd be like, oh, couldn't she be pregnant? No, it's confusing. And sometimes I get it, like a love interest. Yes, it's confusing.
Yes, yes,
it's confusing.
Yes,
like, girl at reception? I don't think it's that confusing if she's pregnant.
No.
And then you realise, like, on screen you don't see pregnant women unless they're talking about being pregnant.
No.
Which, again, makes it this weird, mysterious thing that women just disappear and that's normal. So
it's like if someone coughs in a drama, it's because they're going to die in the next scene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, exactly. And I get it. Storytelling-wise, I totally get it. And when you do see somebody pregnant, you're like, oh, why is she pregnant? Is that because she's going to lose the baby? Or is that because it's his? Like, you're looking for clues.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. So I was working before I was pregnant, and I was doing... I've been to Edinburgh, and I was gigging and doing Ostentatious and, doing all sorts of things. But I'd had this idea for the podcast, and I'd recorded four throughout the year, but not knowing what to do with them.
Yeah.
So from the January, I was like, I'd recorded them and just sat on them and thought, oh, I don't know what to do. And then she was 2 weeks late and I had like five people all wanting something from me, like a treatment or a script. And I suddenly had a very clear, the only thing you need to do is griefcast.
Yeah.
Ignore everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
Which again, I think is, like, being pregnant definitely made me go, and all these other things looked potentially really good.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, I have to do this. And I taught myself sound editing and I edited all four of them. And I got them. I just had this manic, I have to do this, which I actually have had. Any project that's gone well is because something in me is like, you have to do this.
This is good. Yeah.
This is good.
Yeah, yeah. I think that sounds like almost nesting.
Yeah.
It's like almost a furious kind of like burying down, kind of going, you know, this is an idea and it's good and I'm going to lay the groundwork for it to be.
And it was also, funny enough, completely unconsciously, something I could do while looking after her.
Yes.
And I didn't know I'd done that because I actually, from the moment she was born, found gigging very, very difficult and kind of stopped doing it apart from Ostentatious, which is another baby, and my comedy store and stuff. And I was like, oh, I've created a thing with that I can do at home and I can edit at home and I can upload them at home. And I was like, oh, that's... I thought, that's well done, Carrie. Well done. But I was like, definitely wasn't thinking, well, somebody else in my brain was operating that day. I think, it was about creating something that I had control of as well, because you don't have control of a newborn baby, but you can control and edit.
Yeah.
And
okay,
I can cut out this sound.
Exactly.
The sound of screaming.
And you can be creative from your kitchen table.
I think, God, the power of technology, like, that's a wonderful thing that we live in now, that I could get that WAV file and Google how to sound edit and learn for YouTube videos and then ask people on Facebook for advice and then figure out how to get things uploaded. And, you know, I would never have been able to do that, like, even 10 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
So it was like, it gave me such a lifeline, which then helped me calm down about the other stuff.
Yeah.
And then obviously when it went well, it was like, oh, great.
It's actually,
like,
opened doors in other ways.
I think, sort of weirdly, remade me in the same way that becoming a mum remade me. Yeah. It was like, oh yeah, now I'm more of a podcaster now and I'm doing that side of it.
Yeah.
So that change, I was sort of creating another change while this other change was happening to cope with. It's such a shit metaphor, but like, if you decorate a room, you've got to put all the shit outside in the corridor and then you can't get past and you've got to put the masking tape around all the bits and you've got to wash the wall. Like, it takes time and you have to put the room back. Once you've done it, it's beautiful, and you think, I'm glad we painted, but there's definitely that bit where all the stuff is everywhere.
Yes, exactly.
And if you don't acknowledge that and act like that's not annoying, you think you're going mad.
Yeah.
And you have to be like, no, it's annoying that the bed is in the corridor. That's definitely annoying.
And also, you've probably got to have somewhere in your head the, not that either of us are even nearly there yet, but, you know, the point of that child leaving home. And you know that the cliche is the parents are going, do you want to just come back for, maybe, don't go to university quite so far away and all that kind of thing. You think, I will be that person, like, conning my
nails
children into
them,
coming on holiday with us and all that kind of thing.
I'll pay.
Oh, I was just passing and I thought I'd just pop in and see how you were. I mean, I will be that person. So, you think before you know it, you're going to be there, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I didn't want to lose everything I'd worked so hard for.
No.
I think especially as a performer, maybe this is unfair, I've only ever been a performer, but like, it's really fucking hard. It's fucking hard to get in the door, in the next door, to stay in the room. Yeah, they pushed you out because you're too old suddenly to be in that room.
Yes.
And so I didn't want to lose everything I'd worked for and just go, oh, I'm just not an improviser anymore.
No,
it's like,
exactly.
I worked for like 12 years to become where we are with Ostentatious. Yeah. Like that was...
It's really hard.
Yeah, it's really hard. Yeah. So I didn't want it all to just disappear, even though it's not going to. But the panic is it's all going to suddenly turn around and go, you can't come in the room anymore.
No. And also something that...
Guys,
come on. It might feel important, but... something Anna said a few weeks ago was that she said, you know, when she said she was first pregnant, what you realise is has a sort of Chinese whisper effect.
Yeah.
That, you know, yes, she's pregnant and then she has a baby. And then someone, I think there was a casting or something, as someone had said, oh, we didn't ask you because you knew you just had a baby. And she's like, he was 18 months by that point.
Yeah.
And she was like, I haven't just had a baby. But you might have just heard that I had just, you know, and so that's why you kind of want to seem like, yeah, I'm still here, I'm doing this
I'm
and
still
that.
Here,
because
I'm
you
still
don't
available.
Want to, yeah, you don't want that to happen. It's funny, I was once on a writing team with Holly Walsh, who's a good friend of mine, and I remember us making the joke, and we realised at the time it was a joke, before either of us had kids, but we said, I think Holly said it, but we laughed and said it, it's like, I just want to get pregnant as a way out of comedy. Because at the time we'd see people who'd have babies and we'd think, oh, they don't have to worry about, and then you realise, oh no, you still
worry
about those things, but you know what I mean.
I remember someone saying that to me, actually, I'm sure she went mad about Anna when they had Anna and Katie, and then she was pregnant and someone said to me, God, that's the dream, TV series and a baby, done. I remember thinking, even then I thought, oh, I don't think she's done.
No, she's not done.
I think that's a, what? Like as if that's got the cake. I thought, and this person was much younger and lovely, but I just thought, that's what you see. You see, they've ticked all the boxes, they've done the thing, rather than going, no, I just have all the worries and a baby.
Yes, and all that responsibility, responsibility that comes with that.
It's just more stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not, and it's fun, guys, it's fun.
Yeah.
But there's also the worries.
Really scary.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I definitely, having had a difficult pregnancy year, I think that also drove it, if I'm honest, because I did find work really hard when I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And, you know, difficult situations where you can't say out loud, I think this might be because I'm pregnant, like, this isn't happening. So then when I was like, it's fine, don't worry, guys.
Yeah.
Remember the old me?
Yeah.
Remember the me without the baby? She's back. No baby in this belly. Like, yeah, ready to hire. So, and then getting that momentum started, I noticed that, like, it was tough and I got it going and then suddenly went back and I was working and I was doing all the things again. And then you're like, oh, shit, this is a bit too much, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. So, yeah, it's a really hard balance.
Yeah.
Really
and
hard.
Also it changes as well, I think... Definitely the first year that my daughter was around, nothing personal against her, just the difference between having two rather than one, I found it so hard. I upped my work.
Yeah.
And I was working since Zach had been born, but I suddenly kind of was doing more. I think because I was ready to.
Yeah.
Because Zach was... So I sort of reached a point where I was naturally ready to, because Zach was like coming up where he was one, and then I had another baby, so I was going backwards again, and that sort of did my head. I mean, that was insane. But that sort of did my head in, because I was like, no, hang on, I'm in my head
ready to go now,
I'm ready to go back and to be working, but I'm now going back to square one. And so I did work a lot because that was so hard. I realized. And then I got to a point where actually they were both much easier and really fun to be around.
Yeah.
I mean, they were always fun to be around. But then I was like, oh, no, I actually want to hang out with them.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've got to, actually. She's nearly two. It sounds like, now I like her.
Yeah.
That first year, I just absolutely, I found it so hard. And honestly, almost the day she turned one, something in me clicked and I just was like... Oh, I feel like I've got the hang of it.
Yeah.
I felt more confident.
Yeah.
I felt so unconfident for so much of it.
Yeah.
I had a lot of problems at the beginning and a lot of stuff went wrong. And that really knocked my confidence. And I think that made me run away as well.
Yeah.
And just go, well, I'm obviously not the right person to deal with it, am I?
Yeah.
Since I'm ill. So somebody else should just deal with her. But building that back and by a year being like, no, I think I do know what's best for her, actually.
Yeah.
I think
it's trusting your instinct.
Yeah, I think I can hang out with her now by myself and maybe it'll be all right. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, I did have a rough start, as my mum said. You had a rough start.
What things went wrong?
Do you want the full gory details?
Yes, please.
I had a very healthy pregnancy, and then she was 2 weeks late. I mean, it's the best way to put this. My husband's 6'4".
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, dear.
I'm 5'3". Everybody else knew what was going on, and I was hypnobirthing in denial. No baby's too big for its mother, apart from this baby. So she was very big, and we had emergency C-section. So birth wasn't entirely traumatic, but it was very difficult, and mm-hmm. I was in labour for a long time, and then... it didn't work, and I ended up having every medical intervention. And I was someone who was heading for the hypnobirth, water birth,
and a fairy will
be cutting the cord. And it went to this Irish midwife screaming at my husband because, like, we were trying to do skin to skin. And she was like, "We had something like one of them died last week because we didn't keep them warm enough." And like while I'm on the table, and
whoa,
oh, it was mad. It was really mad. But there was also, the surgeon was amazing, but you know what I mean? In the chaos of emergency C-section, a lot of stuff happened. And then I, my scar got infected. And then I basically got mastitis so badly that I was re-hospitalised.
Oh my God.
So I was ill. Yeah, I had a huge amount of trouble breastfeeding, huge, awful trouble breastfeeding. And because I'm a determined, stubborn woman, I got everybody in that I could think possible to help. And I was pumping. And then I got thrush on my nipples.
Oh,
did you know you could get thrush on your nipples?
No.
And mastitis at the same time. So I was advised to pump every 2 hours to deal with the mastitis, which meant I would wake up every 2 hours, 24 hours a day, and pump. So then I had, like, too much milk. Basically, this mastitis just never properly got diagnosed because they kept saying, "You've just had a baby, these things happen, you'll get the hang of it."
Mm-hmm.
And then it got so bad that finally I got to a breast surgeon who was like, "Well, you're about to have sepsis because it's so bad, so you have to be hospitalized now." So yeah, but it was the chaos of birth, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, though, so for 9 weeks, I would say, first 3 months I was ill and I didn't know it and no one else knew it.
Right.
So I would be unable to walk or unable to hold her properly, and I would think, well, I'm a bad mum. But really, I was extremely ill and have fighting an infection that no one realised. Yeah. I mean, it's complicated.
Well, also, that goes back to the same thing of kind of thinking, you know, oh, well, I'm sure it'll be fine. Well, it wasn't
at
the beginning. So maybe it took a while to then trust yourself again to kind of go, no, this probably will be okay if I do it like this.
Or... she was born with a hip problem. So she had to be in a harness till she was like 14 weeks old. So, we had, like, a lot of stuff to deal with.
Yeah.
With this blissful... the first 2 weeks, honestly, I was like... after the birth, even though that was hard, I was like, I got this. I fucking got this. And I felt so powerful. And then people started getting involved and saying...
yeah.
She had to go for x-rays. She had to be put in a permanent harness that held her legs up in the air like a frog. They call it, like, a frog harness.
Aww.
And she hated it.
Yeah.
And literally, at 2 weeks old, they were trying to put it on her. And this surgeon was like, it's like she's fighting me. And she knows she doesn't want it. And I thought... yes, my daughter.
Yeah.
She doesn't want it.
Total sense.
And they were like, but they don't normally react because they're so young. They don't normally. And I was like, she fucking knows what you're up to. Yeah. She would look at him like, yeah.
Did you feel very proud?
I did.
I'm slightly scared.
I was slightly terrified, but also like, yeah, I get it. I hear you. So we had all this stuff and she had a tongue tie and then we had all the breastfeeding. And so everything that could go wrong, it felt like.
Yeah.
And we were having to go to the hospital a lot for her and for me. So it just knocked the confidence out of me completely.
Yeah.
That was interesting, but why don't we talk about something else now?
How has you having a child changed your relationship with your mum?
I see my mum a lot. Oh my God. She comes around every week.
Yeah.
Sometimes twice a week. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But pre-baby, that would have been weird. I'd be like, what does she want? And now it's like, I'll ring her, I go, when are you coming round?
Yeah.
You haven't been round this week.
No.
She's like, oh, well, I wasn't sure if you were. I'm like, yeah, of course I do. When are you coming?
Yeah.
She's like, well, I'll come on Saturday after the hairdressers. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
And I see her a lot, which I am absolutely, absolutely fine with. I know some people would be annoyed, but like I said, we have a different relationship because my dad died, and she's a very, very cool lady. And the great thing about my mum, one of the great things about my mum is she's worked with kids her entire life.
Oh, wow.
So I always thought that like mums were just good at kids, and now I've realised, no, my mum. Because I just thought that's what mums do. They're just brilliant with children and they just play with them really nicely. And then I have equal friends who are like, oh, my mum won't talk to them. And you're like, what? Yeah. My mum worked in a care home in Hackney, and she worked in a nursery and a Montessori trained. Then she trained as a Montessori teacher.
Wow.
And then she's worked in schools. So she loves kids.
Wow.
And like you can, if you turn your back for a second, something's happening. They're painting, they're drawing. And she often talks, she's quite childlike. Like, they'll be having a row about the crayons, the pair of them. That's my crayon. Oh, she's cheeky. She's taking my crayon. I'm like, okay, cool. You guys seem good. So she's amazing. She's amazing. And that's just very incredible for her to have that. I just love it. Like, my daughter loves her. So, like I said, they do row. Like, it's ridiculous. It's like close family, do you know what I mean? Which I like.
Yeah.
I like, because it's not like, oh, grandma's coming.
No.
She saw me the other day, I said, grandma's coming. She went, oh, no. And then she saw him and was like, grandma, grandma. So it's made it, I'd say, a lot closer. The other strange thing that happened was that my mum, her birth, mine and my brother were like the easiest thing that's ever happened to her. Right. She got pregnant like that. She's something like, she said, oh, I've had sex twice in my life without protection. Once with your brother, once for you. And my brother was a 4-hour labour. I was 2.
Wow.
Popped out, no painkillers, nothing.
Wow.
So I thought I would have an easy birth because my mum did. Because
that is often how it works.
That's often how it works. Yeah. Not if your mother is completely different shape to you.
Yeah.
So she's like much taller, completely like, just completely different shape to me. Yeah. And so the other thing that happened was quite strange was, she said to me that when people talked about difficult births, when she was young, she sort of thought, oh, maybe they're like exaggerating a little bit. Like, because she just never had it.
No.
And it wasn't until she saw what I went through. She said it was the first time she understood that births could be difficult.
Yeah.
So I think that was quite enlightening for her.
Yeah.
She had really easy births, but like my brother was a bit of a nightmare, I think, once he was, you know, airside. But so that was, she's very good with that because she didn't have an easy time when she was a mum. First of all, I think she found it quite hard as well, and very isolating and confusing. So she was, it made us closer. I think it was able to see that side of her, and she's able to talk about, oh, you know, I hate going to play groups and I hated all the women there and it took me ages to find my feet with it, and your brother was a nightmare. My mum had to like hold his hands to make him fall asleep, and they slept like that with her, like him in the crook of her arm with her holding both his hands for like a year.
Oh my God.
And she also took, the other story she says is that she didn't wash the sheets for 6 months after she had him, because it was just chaos.
Yeah.
And my dad went back to work 2 weeks after, you know, of course he did, and was working late, running his own business. And my dad kept complaining that it smelt. It's room smells. And she was like, oh, I haven't washed the bloody sheets, shut up.
Yeah.
And he's like, then eventually they were both like, really, really smells. And they had a valance, you know, around the mattress, 80 style. Finally lift it up, there was a dead rat underneath the valance. She might kill me for this. Dead rat or dead mouse. She'll probably claim it as a mouse. And they just
a mouse, fine.
Yeah. And they just hadn't, because she had a bit like, she'd been living in utter chaos. My brother didn't sleep at all.
Oh, wow.
So she said that was a big moment of like, oh, I might need to wash the sheets and like get my shit together. But stuff like that, she's been very honest about her experience. So the only thing we didn't have in common really was the birth.
Yeah.
She said she had never seen anyone suffer. Like, even my birth wasn't that bad, really.
Was she
turned up at the hospital, I didn't let her in the room. She did turn up in the hospital. But because she thought, you know, and everything was going so fine until it didn't, you know. It should have been like, oh, yeah, they popped and everything's fine.
Exactly.
But yeah, then they sort of were like, oh, you might have to go away. It's going to be another 20 hours. Like,
it does make, it is that thing, isn't it, where you suddenly, I feel that in terms of my mom. It's like, there's a whole point where I think you understand the amount that you were loved.
Yes, yes.
You know, so that's you kind of go, oh, I wish I could. There's so much I now see differently that I wish I could connect with her. But it must be nice to, like, you know, I don't know, loop that in with your mum and kind of build on that.
Yeah, is really nice. It's really nice also to see her with my daughter and go, I sometimes see how I misread things. Like, yeah. I'd be like, oh, she was being mean, and seeing like, oh no, it was always, no. she was tired, or yes. it's in meant with love. And also now understanding how tired my mum was, whereas yeah. when I was a kid, I was like, what is her problem?
Yeah.
Why can't she just run around the house with me? I think she's not very nice sometimes. Now you're like, she's tired. She's tired. And I get so tired, and I think, all those years I thought, yeah, my mum is not that fun sometimes. She's just fucking tired. She had two of us, and she did really do everything. Like, my dad did not do an awful lot.
Classic. It's that generation, isn't it?
Classic 80s, well. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And my mum loves to praise my husband for doing any... Oh, he does so much.
It's funny, isn't it?
She said, I wouldn't have left him alone with you.
Do you know what? One of the first reasons I did this podcast was a really brilliant thread on Facebook where someone's made the point where if her husband dropped her kid off at school, he would get like, you know, oh, aren't you being good? Oh, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Time with daddy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, whereas, you know, if there's a day that she doesn't do pickup or something like that, then they'll be like, oh, where were you yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Oh, my God.
Like, what?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. And my husband is, we really do, I would say it's really, really 50-50. Mm. If anything, at the moment, he's doing more. It's 60, he would be cross to him. He's like, it's probably 70-30 to him at the moment, because I've been just work has taken over.
Yeah.
But yeah, my mum always says, oh, he's so good with her, he's so good. And I'm like, he is her, like, it's her dad.
Yes.
She's like, yeah, but your dad, I wouldn't have left him alone with you. He wouldn't know what to do. He wouldn't have known what to do with you.
But it's part of an accumulation of knowledge. It's like, well, of course, he probably wouldn't have done it.
Because it wasn't there from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's true. Like, you know, if you start off 50-50 and sharing that stuff, then everyone gets, you know, if I was away from my kids for... Most of the time, I wouldn't know what to do.
They
change so quickly.
And they would be strangers, and you would think, oh, what do they like doing?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
should we do with you?
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. So, yeah. But, I mean, he is absolutely brilliant with her, I will say that. But, and everyone says, oh, you're so lucky. I'm like, and that's just what should be normal.
Yes, absolutely.
It should be normal. Why is he... I mean, I feel so bad, because it's like, anytime he gets praise, I'm like, yeah, all right. That's fine. It's what he should be doing.
Well, also, it's that thing of like, well, you don't hear people turning to fathers
when mothers are doing
all themselves and saying, you're so lucky.
You're so lucky to have a wife that cares about her children.
Yeah, exactly.
So unusual.
Yeah, exactly.
And she picks them up all the time.
Yeah, so really, every day.
Does she not, like, get bored? Doesn't she have some work to do? Like, yeah. It's,
yeah.
But yeah, he is amazing. I won't take that away. But yeah, it has been very nice to loop that in and see my mum with a young child and be like, oh... I think I probably forgot the fun stuff. Like, I think she is great with kids. I'm like, she must have been doing, like, drawing and stuff with her. Yeah. She says, I did. I bloody did. We baked and we painted and you've forgotten. I'm like, yeah, I think I just remember telly, just watching telly.
Your mum sounds very aggressive.
She is from the East End originally in Essex. But I do also say, if you meet her, she sounds very delightfully North London because she's killed her accent. But in my impression, I won't let it die. She is, yeah, we're both quite aggressive. But we don't mind, because that's how we talk to people.
Fine,
yeah, it's fine.
Now, I ask everyone these questions. First of all, is there any advice, terrible... No, not necessarily advice. What was the worst thing someone said to you once you had a child?
Oh, once I had a child? Oh.
Or while you were pregnant?
Oh, God. There's so many little things. It wasn't any specific... Actually, I will say this, because I'm sure they won't mind, because I talked to someone. Some friends turned up and got pissed. Don't do that.
In your house? With
the newborn. They turned up with booze, and they got pissed. And we've never really talked about it, although they all know I'm annoyed about it. Because it's like, it was so weird. They turned up and it was like, we used to get pissed together. Yeah, not quite as bad as that, but like they took over the living room, they served themselves booze, they got drunk... And it got so bad that I had to take her upstairs to my husband and put her in a bedroom and say, can you, because she doesn't like it down there because they're all pissed. And he was like, what's happening? And I was like, I don't know. You know, you're like, I'm too ill and tired to deal with this.
It's not simple.
I can't navigate it. And then eventually they were like, we might go out. And I was like, yes, I think you should go. Why don't you go? I'm definitely not coming with you. Oh, you don't want to come out? No, I won't be coming with you. So that, I definitely advise don't turn up and get pissed.
No, that's a really good tip. Yeah.
you wouldn't think you'd have to say it.
No, you wouldn't, really.
But it was very odd.
Wow.
I don't think they meant to. Again, it was like, I think I probably was like, yeah, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine.
Yeah, and you want to be the same person, and then you're like, I'm knackered, I'm not,
yeah.
I'm not. I am the same person in the important ways, but I don't want to get pissed with these people right now.
Yeah.
I can't get pissed with these
people. We don't see each other a lot, and every time we do, it would generally end like that. So I think they were like, way, congratulations. Most people give you a bottle of champagne and they give it to you. These guys, they were pop. They were like, here's the champagne. So pop, pop, funny. Where's your glasses? And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, it was very weird. So I'd recommend don't do that. That was really hard.
And what's the best bit of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, I suppose the only... My mum did say this, and I think it took me a long time to hear it, is like, no bit is permanent. Nothing lasts. And I think that's once you get your head around that. So like, if everything's a phase, everything. So everything that's hard will go and the good bits will go, but it always means it's like there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And I really honestly remember, when she must have been like 3 months old and like your breast milk's leaking everywhere and my hair was soaking and I was crying and I couldn't get dressed because she was crying so much. And I thought, wow, you know, I genuinely thought, I guess I'll just never ever put makeup on again and I'll never blow dry my hair ever again and I'll just have to wear like disgusting clothes the rest of my life. And I guess that's what no one wants to tell you because it's so awful. And they, of course they don't tell you that, Cariad, because no one would have children, but now you know, you're just going to have to get on with it.
I remember, just accept it.
Yeah, I really seriously had a talk to myself, like, yeah, but with good grace, this is your life.
This is your life now, this is who you are.
You'll just be disgusting forever.
Yeah.
And, oh, well, you had a good time. And if I just realised for a second, like, no, don't worry. She'll eat solid food. and that will pass. And I couldn't see the wood for the trees. I honestly thought that was it forever. Or that they'll, you know, you'll never sleep again. It's like, you will. Of course, you're always tired, but not in that first year tired.
No, yeah.
So, yeah, it's just like everything's a phase. Everything will pass.
Yeah.
It won't stay like this, you know. And you get better at every stage. That's the other thing I like. It's like a computer game.
Yes, it is.
You get better. Yeah. Once they've had that first stomach bug, oh, next time you're on it. You know what to do. Or the first cold. The first time it happens, we were like, oh, my God. We were like in A&E because she had a fever. Now you're like banging the cow pole. Get the snot plug. Like, got the steamer. Like, you're just on it.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, great.
And we know what to do.
We know what to do. Yeah. And you just have to, unfortunately, you have to go through each thing, have a panic once. So the panic's always there. But once you've done it once, you're like, okay, got this. So that's nice to know. It's always getting better.
Yeah. I guess that's life, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's just on such a obvious scale. Mm-mm. Like, with your career, it's quite hard to see how you're getting better or, like, at writing or auditions and stuff. You don't really notice. But with that, it's so obvious that, like, you're better at feeding her than you were last week.
Yeah.
Like, you're better at, like, giving her a bath than last week. You definitely are. Like, you didn't accidentally dunk her this week. Congratulations. You figured out how to hold her head and grab the towel. Like, you remember to bring the hair clip into the bathroom.
Yes.
You got Paddington downstairs already, so it was there because, you know, she goes mad and you're like, I'm on it, mate. I'm on it. So nice. So I'm only at the very beginning of it all, really. But it's
don't
nice.
Don't feel like it, though.
No, it's just nice not to have the beginning bit.
Yeah.
It gets better. That's my advice. It gets better.
Yeah. That was the brilliant Cariad Lloyd. Thank you so much for coming in to see me. We talked for ages. That is one of the most difficult edits I've had to do because I had to cut something. Otherwise, you know. Oh, maybe I
should release a special edition, the whole conversation.
I just try and keep it under an hour if I can. But we just banged on for ages because she's just such a lovely person to talk to and such a thoughtful person to talk to as well, with great insight. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. And next week we will be talking to, just me, let's face it. I will be talking to Jenna Russell, the renowned, is renowned a bad word? I remember finding out that infamous, I always thought as a child infamous meant like just really, really famous. And then you realise, oh no, it's gone a little bit bad. Renowned. I think renowned's okay. Anyway, renowned actress, stage actress, musical actress,
EastEnders actress and a very lovely and funny person. And so she will be on Boxing Day, right in the middle of your Christmas. So we might even try and have some jingly jangly bells. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode and I will see you next time. If you feel the urge, rating, subscribing, all that jazz would be really, really appreciated. It really helps kind of, it's all about algorithms, isn't it? So it just helps it appear so people know it's there to listen to it or hate it or whatever, but you know, it all helps. So thank you if you have done that, and if you do feel the urge, I would be hugely, hugely in your debt. Thank you and see you next time.
Bye bye.